Tylan Douglas Gabriel here, and we're going to take you on a spiritual journey to meet the guardian of the threshold, or at least point out what the guardian of the threshold is. Every person who crosses from the physical world into the spiritual world must meet the guardian of the threshold between these worlds, you wrote, Douglas Gabriel, in the most amazing article that I have posted along with this audio. Who is the guardian of the threshold?
Well, it's an honor to try to answer that question. And it's a principal question for anyone who's on the spiritual path of self-development. Because whether you like it or not, and most of us don't like it, the self-knowledge that comes on the path of spiritual development is given to us by the guardian of the threshold. But the way that looks is different depending upon who you talk to. So when you're going back and you're reading in the past and they describe this guardian, it's completely different imagery, completely different beings. In Egypt, it was the god Anubis who weighed your soul against a feather upon a scale. And then that would determine whether you'd go to the next level. And you could be terrified. With the Tibetans, they call it the Bardo. And these beings come at you. They're terrifying. And they come right at you. And if you are scared of them, they overwhelm you. And you faint, basically. But if you can work through them and realize that they are a part of yourself and absorb these supposedly wrathful deities and the bardo of the Tibetan Buddhist description of this afterlife, the afterlife is the same thing as what happens when you go into the spiritual world when you sleep at night or when you're doing spiritual exercises that would lead you to initiation. Now, in the past, initiation was quite different. Today, it's all about self-initiation. But in the past, they had to prepare you to see this being because it would terrify you. It was like there's different thresholds. And one of the thresholds is to go into the underworld. Another one is to go into the upper world.
Well, the reason that I ask you to help define this for everyone is because what I saw over on American intelligence media was that people were having threshold experiences that they just can't handle. They're looking at the world just falling apart around them, and they have lost their bearings. And it became evident to me that, oh my, just as individuals can have a threshold experience, so can groups of people, communities. Well, actually, the whole global community is having a threshold experience right now. And so this is what you beautifully helped us walk through in your article.
And you can read that in the article. And to add to that, I'll just say in response to what you just said, that in our present time, because humanity has been unconsciously pulled across the threshold between the physical and the spiritual world, they are meeting the dweller of the threshold, the guardian of the threshold, in its three different forms. The aberration of thinking, feeling, and willing, those three different parts of the human soul are pulled in three different directions, even now as humanity as a whole is pulled across the threshold. So if you do not have a strong sense of who you are in your heart, you're a strong I am, or you can say an ego, but people don't like that word, a strong self. If you don't have a strong self in your heart, then you may be pulled apart, whether you're in initiation or right now, because humanity is being pulled across the threshold, simply looking around you. It looks like the apocalypse of the war of all against all. It looks as if the beast has risen from below. It looks as if, you know, the seven-headed, ten-horned dragon is about to consume the child that is born of the blessed virgin. Well, you know, that's right, but that's exactly also what happens when you get initiated. You see the same exact thing that St. John wrote in his Apocalypse, in the Gospel of St. John. In the Apocalypse of St. John, because the Apocalypse says that you go through those experiences, but in the end, it's all good and it's resolved for those who are spiritual. That's what happens. So if you're an aspirant and you're trying to become initiated and you want to get across the threshold, in the old days, you'd go to a mystery center, a mystery school, and they'd teach you things of how to prepare yourself through all kinds, sometimes years of preparation, of abstinence, of not eating meat in some cases. Within the Pythagorean school of Crotona, you couldn't eat beans, or you couldn't have certain foods, you couldn't do certain things. And then you had to go through oblations, you had to go through preparations and renunciations and all this stuff for as long as they said. And in some cases, for instance, in the Tibetan lineage and in the Tibetan teachings, you may go through the preparation for a certain initiation and still not get it in this incarnation. They may look at you and go, nope, you're not ready for that initiation. Same thing happened in the past. So when you were initiated in Egypt, it was different than when you were initiated in Greece. And so we have these stories of the super Greek heroes going into the underworld, whether it be Theseus or also Aeneas, the Roman, or whether it be Mercury, Hermes, going to bring Persephone from the underworld. All this going into the underworld. What happens when you go to the underworld? Well, you're going to see a three-headed dog, Cerberus. And you're going to see the ferryman, Chiron. Well, if you don't have the money for Chiron, you can't get into the underworld. And if you cannot get past the three-headed dog, you can't get to the ferryman. So the first thing that you have to do is face the three-headed dog. Well, what is that? That's the aberration of your thinking, feeling, and willing. All the things you did wrong in your thinking, feeling, and willing, as they are all going in different directions as you're dealing with people. And when truly you were doing things that you really didn't feel from your heart were true, or that you thought with your head and overwhelmed your thing. You know, so people can't get their thinking, feeling, and willing even separated, let alone develop them so that they can be higher spiritual, supersensible organs that can go into the world beyond the threshold. So when you get to the threshold, what are you going to meet? You're going to meet your lower self, your doppelganger, it's called, your double. You have three of them. And you need to resolve them. And that's what karma is. That's why every night before you go to sleep, you should have a guilty conscience for everything you did wrong of the day. So what do? The old style, you kneel next to your bed and you do your prayers and you review your day and you think who you harmed and you do what? An act of contrition. And you say, oh, I'm going to resolve that tomorrow. Well, that's great. That's what you would do after you died. You would wish that you had done that during your life. You wish, you know, right after you die and you look back, you go, oh man, I sure do wish that I would resolve that stuff when I could. Well, that's what happens every night before you go to sleep. Now, the technicality here is the descriptions of people will say, it's terrifying. It's going into a cave. It's like drowning. It's like there's a monster getting you. There's a serpent wraps around you. There's a lion that eats your heart. There's a snake that gets your brain. There's a dog that chews on your stomach. Da, 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 da. All that's true. Yes, it's whatever image you want. Doesn't matter. It's just you working through the karma that you can't take across the threshold because it can't be accepted into the spiritual world. Only those things which are eternal and true and virtuous can go into the spiritual world, so you can't get across the threshold. So every night, what happens? When we get ready to go to sleep, if you did your prayers, you'll probably find that you go to sleep pretty easily. If you didn't do your prayers, you might have some nightmares or stuff going on, you know. But if you did your stuff and you prepared for it, you looked at your day and you said, how can I make it better tomorrow, especially with the people who I harmed today? How can I straighten out my thinking and my feeling and my willing? How can I do that? Well, the dweller is there. And as you're lying there in bed and you're looking at that threshold, you can look at your lack of coherence during the day. And if you do that, then you won't have those nightmares because you will have digested it before you went to sleep.
Let me give you another imagination. It's one that I always see, is that imagine at the hill of Golgotha that Christ said, you know, here's the way, follow the way. And he gave us these teachings. And we should have been listening and paying attention. The Roman Catholic Church, though, got a hold of the early Christians and destroyed what really is Christianity. Imagine that we were given, as human beings, 2,000 years plus some change to follow Christ. But if you wasted your incarnations and you did evil things and you pile those evil things on top of evil things, then at this point in time, as you cross the threshold, we all are crossing a threshold in humanity. Those are not pretty sights, because then you look at pedophilia and satanic rituals and lying and propaganda and traitors and...
Absolutely. It's important to remember that Christ, when he went into the desert to begin his ministry, was then what? Tempted. And he was tempted in three different ways. And so we all are. And so we have to look at those temptations and we have to get through them and we have to turn away from money, power, control in this physical world. So in The Angel in the Astral Body by Rudolf Steiner, he clearly describes what happens in the modern times. And he says that the aberration of thinking, feeling, and willing turn into, in thinking, it turns into neuroses. Well, our age is just a pack of neuroses. And every person is challenged to not be neurotic with all the information coming at them. And the second thing that would happen in their feeling would be psychosis. We are in an age where everything seems crazy at this particular point, but that where craziness is becomes the, though it may be the lowest denominator, lowest common denominator for an individual, it becomes the new policy of the left, of progressiveness, of being able to allow everyone to express whatever they wish to express. That's called psychosis. And you can't get a footing when you don't know really what is right or wrong. And this is the problem that's in feeling. And then he clearly described that when the will is in its aberrant stage, when we cross the threshold, if you have not resolved these things, then it turns into aberrations of sex and violence. Well, the violence is all the wars. The violence is that we hate everybody who isn't like us. The violence is so profound, everyone sees it. And the sex, well, yes, I just saw something that was saying that most of the evil going on is basically because people don't understand what love is or sexuality, and it's all twisted up, and the family's destroyed, and your identity's destroyed, and then after that, it's all just a hodgepodge of nonsense. And this is so true. So Rudolf Steiner describes this meeting on the guardian of with the guardian of the threshold, how it would look here on this side. Neurosis in your thinking, psychosis in your feeling, aberrations of sex and violence in your will. And what is that? That is television and media, isn't it? That's what's coming at you from all directions at all times. Too much information, absolutely no grounding, getting rid of all religious connection to anything moral, anything good, cancel all culture, cancel all history, cancel all morality. That's what we see right now, because why? It looks as if thinking, feeling, and willing are going in different directions and that no one can pull them together and basically grab what you can. And then people believe this is all there is, this life, and then they start to grab what they can. And that leads to the path of perdition, the seven deadly sins. Well, the seven deadly sins feeds your double and your doppelganger. It feeds those three beasts that the dweller wants you to resolve. It's your lower dragon. It can also be seen as the lower part is the dragon, get control of your desires, the wolf that chews on your heart, and this snake that has been the serpent wound around the tree since the Garden of Eden, whispering in your ear. Now, we also gave some of the views of Alice Bailey from her descriptions of the Guardian of the Threshold. She was a student of Blavatsky's, and she had kind of a channeled view of things because she was channeling Dwal Kul, this Tibetan master. And what she says, some is good and some is not. But it shows you the confusion. So at the threshold, people are going to tell you, oh, there's a right and a wrong, and that's it. Nope, there's three choices. It's not the right and the wrong. And if you think that, then what you have is you've confused the two types of Satan, basically, and Lucifer. You've combined them now. As we know, Satan and Lucifer both tempted Christ. So when you get to the guardian, yes, you're going to be tempted by what is called in anthroposophy, Lucifer and Ahriman. And you shouldn't go to the left or the right. You should stay in the middle and see first who are you going to see at the threshold. If you were developed, if you could digest your karma properly, resolve your karma, if you can develop what is needed to get across a threshold, which is moral development. There's nothing short of that. Nothing else can help you remember what you experience on the other side except moral development.
But you don't follow the Luciferic or the Ahrimanic path. You follow the way. You follow the path of Christ, just what I was saying before. And I believe that we were given 2,000 years to follow the way. And now as we cross the threshold, this human threshold we are all crossing, that now on the other side, our karma matters. And what we've done in the past, we are going to have to face now. So a Hillary Clinton doesn't get any more free passes.
Or no one does.
Well, yeah. But you know, I think Hillary, because people want to know, will she ever be punished? Well, we don't need to worry about that, people. She's punishing herself. When you understand the law of karma, what happens?
Oh, yes. And when you die, you're going to meet whoever you see that being as, but they're going to have a scale, just like Anubis had a scale. And they're going to weigh your soul to see if there's any spirit in it, to see if any of the eternal virtues were gleaned out of this earthly realm and brought into the spiritual realm, and she'll have nothing, and we know the realm that she'll go to. When the three-headed dog gets to her, it'll be scared of her. Yeah, she will have no problem getting by the three-headed dogs. They will welcome her into the underworld. But for the rest of us, you know, we're trying to go up. We're trying to get wings, not trying to get power on the earth. So as long as you follow the right path, then this can work, but it has to be through your intention. It has to be through moral intention. It has to be not just for yourself. In a certain sense, depending upon your age, that may be part of your motivation, but it should be for the sake of all other beings that you want to become better so that you can serve them better. And if that's your intention, and it's really simple as that, and if you can pull your thinking, feeling, and willing together and get out of your neurosis, psychosis, and aberrations of sex and violence, and that means power too, you know, all that sex and violence mean, then you have the chance to be Saint Michael. In our age, it's seen as many Christians see this dweller first as the being of Saint Michael with scales, you know, the scales that weighs your soul. And that's in the left hand. And there's a shield on that arm that covers Michael's heart to protect, because Michael, the Archangel Michael right now is the time spirit Michael, and Michael in the past was called the countenance of Christ, the face of Christ. The Archangel Michael is the Archangel of the Son, and of course Christ works through the Elohim of the Son, all seven of them, but of course Christ is higher than that, but the local manifestation is through the Son that controls all the planets, and so Michael is the Archangel of the Son representing Christ. So that's why you would see, if you were a Christian, and particularly of certain esoteric streams, Western esoteric streams, you would see this being. Now, this being is going to scare the snot out of you because the being has a flaming sword. Are you really ready to see the flaming sword of an archangel? I don't think so. And are you really ready to have your soul weighed? Oh, no, 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 no. And look what's below Michael, a dragon. Now, mind you, this is what's so often misunderstood. The Archangel Michael did not kill that dragon. He cast him to the earth. And now the Archangel Michael himself has come to the earth in 1879. And another war in heaven was fought. And the Archangel Michael is down on the earth with the cosmic wisdom. So at the same time that the threshold beings are trying to teach us about resolving our negative astral karma, our desire body, tame our own dragon, the Archangel Michael's brought us cosmic wisdom, as long as you're willing to endure looking at that flaming sword. So you see the Archangel Michael. You see the flaming sword. If you could see the shield, you'd be very impressed. If you could see the scales, that means you're ready to have your soul weighed. But below Michael is the dragon, but it's really Lucifer fallen. But it's really a combination of Lucifer and Ahriman in anthroposophic terms, or Satan in Christian terms. So the two of them are mixed. And what happens? Now, the Archangel Michael may have a spear, usually does, and a sword. And the spear is held downward, holding the dragon at bay with the spear in the mouth of the dragon, taming it. Because once you tame the forces of the dragon, you can use it to do anything. But if you can't tame it, it's going to get you, and its fire will consume you. But if you could if you could have the fire of the dragon, the strength of the dragon, you could forge really a spear of Michael, a sword of Michael. So there's a sword and a spear in the Grail myth, isn't there? And then there is, of course, the Grail, which feeds all things. Well, that's Michael and his sword in this particular case. So, and the spear in this case. But where is the Grail? Well, you are the Grail. That's the I am. That's your I am. And if you can endure that being, which you can't, by the way, unless you're really highly developed, you are going to pass out. You're going to faint. And that's how we go to sleep at night, isn't it? Try as you will. I give you the challenge tonight. Try to remember the exact moment of falling asleep. It is not possible, because that which you use to analyze your thinking and memory is not what you use to get into the spiritual world. Because on the other side, and here is the big sad message, on the other side, it's so confusing when you see the astral light, because it's upside down, inside out and backwards. And that means in time and space, both, and consciousness. So if you can endure being upside down, inside out and backwards, which is really what your dreams, right? If you look, when we're in the awake in the earth, we're looking to the outside to try to find out who we are. When we're asleep at night, we're looking to the inside. Well, those are the two paths to get across the threshold. But the third path is to directly have a contact with the greater guardian of the threshold. Now, here's where the debate comes. Lesser guardian, greater guardian. Rudolf Steiner gives the clearest distinctions in all of these things. And no matter where you study, nobody gives you characterizations for our time like Rudolf Steiner does to help you with the guardian of the threshold. He wrote a mystery initiation play based upon the secrets of the threshold. He gave a series of lectures if you want to see what would be in the play and also in his first class of the High School of Spiritual Science, which is an initiation of a sort that was supposed to have three levels. And on the first level, you would be introduced to what we're talking about here. And I can't give you the secret mantras because I believe that they should be kept secret, though you can go online and get all of them. You can get them in a book. So if you really want to work with the Guardian of the Threshold, all you have to do is get the books. There's different translations of them, of Rudolf Steiner's first-class teachings. And
People shouldn't be too hung up on that, because for me personally, my threshold experience happened when I was 21 years old, and I didn't know anything about anthroposophy and any kind of mantra or anything, but the experience was still there. And when I go and reflect back on it, it happened because I was ready. People just know when they're ready.
Spontaneous initiation has happened in all traditions. The golden moment of illumination, enlightenment. Yaka Burma looked into a pewter dish and he received enlightenment and could speak multiple languages, though he didn't.
I'm not talking about the enlightenment experience. I'm talking about meeting the guardian of the threshold. And I'm just talking about the lower levels. And I'm just saying that then people get all hung up that they have to go find the right mantra because they want the experience. And the experience finds you if you open your heart to love and prayer and meditation.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, that is true. The guardian is as close as your unresolved sins, your unresolved imperfections, your sharp edges. They're everywhere, and everyone tries to tell you about them. And most of us don't want to hear any of that. We think we'll work on that later, but in fact, those are the very things that the Guardian is telling us day in and day out. And so you can't really get away from it, but if you are what you had as an experience, then that was like a spiritual, direct experience of a manifestation of the Guardian, who does show up and sometimes can look like the messenger of death. It can scare the snot out of people. So it comes all the time. And if you have a near-death experience, people often will experience seeing Lucifer and Ahriman and seeing the being of death and then having some kind of spiritual angel or something come in to help them. So, you know, people might also say, well, if you're going to cross the threshold, what does your guardian angel have to do with that? Your guardian angel is going to connect you to all the right beings to help you develop yourself, but they can't help you get across the threshold. That is a free will deed of love that can, you'll only have consciousness of it if you're doing it for the sake of all sentient beings. And if you do, then you're going to have things like our experiences in the Old Testament or St. John in Apocalypse. You're invited up into a realm where you have basically, you sit at a table. There's lots of candelabras and 24 either beautiful maidens or basically aeons or whatever you want to call them, candelabras, whatever. But anyway, it's the same scene everybody sees. They just use their own symbols and you have a communion. So if you can get by the guardian of the threshold because you have a pure soul, then you get to have communion with the angels, archangels, archai, and all the other beings that those particular that enter your thinking, feeling, and willing through what Rudolf Steiner, of course, calls imagination, inspiration, and intuition, which is what you bring back at night after your sleep. If you truly go to sleep having resolved any karma that you need to resolve, in other words, forgiving yourself, forgiving everyone, and loving yourself, and that's what gets you across the threshold, that and purity. But you can practice, practice, practice. And like Tyler just said, you can have all the mantras, secret mantras of Rudolf Steiner's first class initiation. You can have the other ones from many initiations I've had, descriptions of how to get through, how to work through this being, how to work with this being. But I'm going to try to break it down in very simple terms. So as you approach the threshold, you're going to go to sleep, whether you're in serious meditation, going to sleep, or death. That is usually called, up until death, the lesser guardian, and at death called the greater guardian. I'm not sure that helps anybody. But anyway, let's say that right now you're alive and you go across the threshold tonight. Who do you see? You're going to see this being holding up the scales, and you're going to say, I don't want to see my sins. Hell no, thank you. I'd rather go to sleep. And that's why we aren't angels. We're humans, and we need one third of our life asleep like babies. Because why? We need to digest all the junk we're doing in the daytime that we really aren't putting enough thinking into, or our proper feeling, or our very careful will and development, and, you know, doing the will of the divine, not your own personal will. So you're going to see Michael, but if, remember, Michael, now this is the key point I want to make. The other side of Michael is a being called Sophia, the being of wisdom, the being of the Kyriotetes that descended with Christ as Christ came to the earth through the, what Rudolf Steiner calls, for those of you who are anthroposophists, the pre-earthly deeds of Christ. The midwife of that being, who Steiner calls the Nathan soul, the perfect human that was held back at the time when all humans were created, there was a perfect male, and I'm sorry to have to say it, folks, but there was also a perfect female. We won't go into there today, but the Kyriotetes, which is the local manifestation of wisdom of the being of Sophia, who actually came from a higher realm, some call her the heavenly Sophia, came through the Kyriotetes and brought down this being of Nathan and went through the pre-earthly deeds. And really, this is the sheath of Christ, the sheath of the etheric risen Christ. We can't endure seeing it in the etheric, so we can see it as a human if we were initiates through the astral realm. And it would first appear as Michael defeating the dragon. That's the Holy Grail. And that really the scales are the Grail, that and the shield mixed together in the breastplate. But anyway, the heart is the Holy Grail, and you have to have the sword, and you have to be able to tame the dragon, and then you're able to get across. And when you get across, when you look back and you are headed back to wake up in the morning, Sophia, the being of wisdom, stands there, and she's the midwife to help you back into your body to try to help you. Well, basically, most people are materialists, and they don't really go all the way out in the spiritual world. So Sophia's there trying to help all those people because they didn't get enough spiritual nourishment at night. And she's the one who provides everyone with all the spiritual nourishment. She's always there, always has been. Every single step you take in spiritual development, she is there as the other side. There's always an other side, a duality in the physical world. So you got Michael on one side and Sophia on the other. And Michael and Sophia, for if you go in meditation or sleep across the threshold, as long as you've tamed the dragon, the three lower beings, as long as you've been the true Michaelic spirit, then you can get across and you get nourished at night. If you're lucky enough, they set a table for you, you set a table for them, and you have a lovely communion back and forth. And that's what so many of the religious services are all about, transcendental communion with higher spiritual beings in their realm, which is hard to do when you're upside down, backwards, and inside out, especially if you can't control your thinking, feeling, and willing.
But also, your own higher thoughts, your spiritual thoughts, draw the angels to you.
Yes, absolutely. That's why your guardian angel, when you have higher thoughts, people think they're their own thoughts. No. No, they belong to the angels, and they're just loaning them to you.
Imagine that your higher thoughts are like nectar that are sitting on the top of your head, and the angels are coming and dipping themselves in, because this is their nourishment. And what they leave behind is what you experience with these things like synchronicity and flow. That's what they leave behind.
And true imagination, inspiration, intuition, you wake up and you go, whoa, I need to do this. Well, when you went to sleep, you didn't even think about it, but you woke up in the morning, you know, you got to go do something that you unconsciously didn't even remember you did. So you got to go undo it. Yeah, that's the way the spiritual world works.
But people ask me all the time, they go, whoa, Tyler, how do you get into that flow you have? Well, you know, anybody can do it, but you first need to elevate your own thinking to a spiritual level. I would always read in the morning. I loved reading Anthroposophy, and I would work with study groups. We would study Rudolf Steiner, and I would meditate. And those are the things that create the nectar that the angels are attracted to. And then there becomes this symbiotic relationship between you and the higher worlds.
Absolutely. That's that communion. You're describing the earthly and cosmic nutrition stream, which you have written about so aptly in the Gospel of Sophia. And we're talking about what the third book of Gospel of Sophia is, which is learning a language of the spirit that is a self-initiation process. And that's what we're trying to describe here today. And so once you see Michael and you start to head towards Christ, well, by the time you see Michael, your guardian angel has already intervened. You couldn't have gotten to Michael if your own personal angel hadn't connected you to other angels that led you to really a threefold vision of the Archangel Michael, your true thinking, feeling, and willing being held together by the ego of a higher Christened self. And that's where you get the strength to be able to witness these things. But right after that, if you are headed towards Christ, do not think that you are evolved enough to simply see Christ. Now, you might, especially if you're in great desperation, Christ will literally has the ability, as we've already seen, when he appeared to his disciples after his death, to literally appear physically anywhere as much as possible, as many bodies as want. Anything is possible with the being of Jesus Christ, or the high, you know, especially the etheric Christ. And so the etheric Christ, you're not going to see directly, but in the astral realm, the first thing you'll see is his body of the Nathan soul, this angel body that the Kyriotetes, that Sophia helped bring down to the earth, that then was incarnated in the virginal soul of the Virgin Mary, and then the virginal soul of the Adam Kadmon, as Rudolf Steiner calls it, or called from the Hebrew tradition, in other words, the original Adam. So the original Adam is this being who comes down, and this is the Holy Grail. And it's the perfect example of what we need in terms of love and compassion to be able to get across the threshold if we just followed the one rule that Jesus of Nazareth gave us even before Christ indwelled the body of Jesus of Nazareth for 3 years and carried out that ministry from the time of the temptation. So in the last 3 years, Christ himself went through going across the threshold to the point that in the end, he was, as Rudolf Steiner describes it, somewhat across the threshold already, that his body was discorporating, it was going into his disciples. They were able to speak as if they were Jesus Christ. Why? Because his higher self had dwelt among them so long and was almost like their group soul that they could speak and nobody even knew which one was Jesus of Nazareth. That's what happened in the end and why he bled, sweated blood. And the cup that was offered, well, that is the cup. If you look at the scales, they can also be looked at in a way as a cup because Michael is bringing the cup. Michael's bringing the grail. Now, the being of Nathan appears as an angel. You nor I, in this human incarnation, can even imagine what an angel perception through a supersensible organ would seem like. But if, let's say, you get to that point and that angel, your guardian angel, connects you to the archangel Michael, who connects you to many other beings, and you then move towards Christ, you would see the being of Nathan. And this is what everybody described in the old days when they did overdoses of drugs as seeing the white light. It's a sound of almost bells and ringing, and you know that's the harmony of the spheres. And then this white light rolls in, and then they're just wiped out. Because why? They go unconscious. But they usually have a message, and the message is something about Christ. And so then if you could get beyond that, then you would see the real greater guardian, the real Lord of Karma, and that is the etheric Christ. Christ in his nature now is the Lord of Karma. And so Jesus, so really the scales are, when you see Michael, that's just a prevision of the scales. The real scales come with the Lord of Karma and Christ. Now, if you were to witness Christ through a meditation and you were that highly developed, or you could somehow witness Christ through an apocalypse, or as Tyler's pointed out, through sometimes a shocking and awakening experience of the dweller, and or those golden moments of illumination, or as what Steiner calls the experience of Paul on the road to Damascus. In other words, seeing the etheric Christ. If you could see the etheric Christ, don't worry, you would know it because you would come back with so many moral impulses of intuitions that you would know what to do because you would have given your will over to this being. Now, at death, all of this will happen. You'll see your life very quickly. Well, that's what happens when you look at the scales. When someone is drowning, they see their life flash before them. That's the same thing. At night, when you go to sleep, if you really knew about it, you'd notice that your eyes do everything backwards of everything you saw on the day. That's the way it works. Backwards, inside out, upside down. And in the day, we're outside, looking outside. At night, we're inside. And what we're supposed to be is somewhere in between. So if you understand the lesser and greater guardian, Michael, Sophia, and first your guardian angel, and then Nathan, and then Christ and the etheric, that is the whole picture of what would have to be described as the beings that you would meet during initiation, or if you were successfully able with a pure heart to cross the garden to the threshold and leave behind the neurosis and psychosis and the aberrations of the willpower in sex and violence that are so rampant all around us. And none of that can be carried into the spiritual world. And so, unfortunately, when you get into the spiritual world, the only light you have is the light you brought. And most of us don't even have a candle. We have a little match that burns out quickly.
I want to point out that in the article, you have the section on the bottom, which is the largest part, where you have pulled out all of the important things that Steiner had written about the guardian of the threshold throughout a lot of different works. Now, we really love that about you, Douglas, because most people do not have the time to read Steiner the way we used to back in the 80s and 90s. So you go in and you grab the great stuff and you put them in a way that we can kind of look at it all together. That alone, the piece is worth going into.
Well, as you know, that's what we call neoanthroposophy. It's simply a restating of Rudolf Steiner, plain and simple and clear. Notice I give no commentary. There doesn't need to be a commentary. If you put it in the right order, it tells the story, it tells you exactly what you need to know. And if you're not ready, it's not going to jump to knowledge of higher worlds and occult science. It's going to tell you first off, hey, get ready. This is what you're getting into, because you need to know what you're getting into, because otherwise it can be scary. And as he points out in his beautiful descriptions, that if you go the wrong direction, it can lead to serious problems. And so I always like to give a little overview of what I've learned and try to put it in a modern perspective, and then try to give you the most ancient views, usually taken from the Hindus and from the Puranas and the Vedas and the Blavatsky and all these sources. And then I may give you a modern view like Alice Bailey, or like I take Sir Edward Bulwer-Lytton and Zanoni, one of the most quoted references of the Dweller on the Threshold, which is incorrect, and even come up into modern times and quote one of my favorite lyricists, Van Morrison. Yeah, giving a summary of Alice Bailey's teachings on the Dweller of the Threshold. And it's like very cool, because this is what's necessary. And now, if you have the middle path and you simply do it by faith and you simply face the threshold and you say, Jesus Christ is going to get me across the threshold, and that pure impulse is there, that's really all you need. You don't need to have all the heavy thinking. You don't need to do all the special mystery school training, because there is no more. You got to do it by yourself. But if you just go through the purity of the heart and you really simply say that you wish to absorb your higher self, you don't even have to get religious in any sense of the word, you will be instructed each step of the way. And it will not be simple. And if anybody ever tells you spirituality is simple, they're wrong. All the visions that I know of anyone seeing Mother Mary or seeing the heavens, they usually are shown hell first, and it's because they've suffered. I don't know anyone who's seen a vision who hasn't suffered, and suffered before, during, and after. And so you don't really want these things. You want to go the gradual, slow route, but that is the path of spiritual development. For those in the quick route, be careful. Drugs will take you across the threshold, but without moral development, you won't remember a thing when you come back. And if you come back and you don't have the impulse of a fiery will to help others, it is fake what you were taught. You were taught by fake beings. Those are nothing more than the projections of your mind in that realm. Because what do you see in that realm? What you project. Where do you go in that realm? Where you wish to go. But everything is backwards. So you don't, if you wish to go to someplace far away, you have to go inside. Everything is backwards. And this is, you can't get used to this. Trust me, even as a human being in a physical body while you're alive, it is the most disconcerting type of triple, vertigo. It's kind of like triple vertigo on all levels, and then even more complicated than that. But that's what you're experiencing, and that's the transcendental experience that everyone is looking for, but they don't want to pay the dweller. They don't want to pay Chiron to take them into the underworld before they rise up into the realm of the stars. They don't want to tame Cerberus. Hercules had to go to the underworld and bring Cerberus back. And when he took him before Eurystheus, he jumped in a vase. He was so scared. And then he reneged on Hercules because he was so angry that he had been scared by bringing this three-headed dog into the upper world. So this is what happens if you are not prepared. So you need to go slow, do what is called morality development, what's called sutrayana. You do prayers and meditations, called mantrayana. And then if you want to get really complicated, then you think about higher spiritual beings, the hierarchies, and you try to imagine them with all your heart's intent, and then you try to become like them. In Tibetan Buddhism, that's called Vajrayana. And then there's the union called Tantrayana, which has nothing to do with sex. It has to do with union of you being in union with higher spiritual beings. And so there's four steps, but it doesn't matter. Just as Tyler said, you will be led. It is a path up the mountain. If your legs aren't hurting, you're not going up. You're going down. And it's as simple as that. Everyone knows the difference between right and wrong, good and bad, up and down. And it really is that simple. Are you ascending to be an angel, or are you descending to be a devil? And yes, forces of the dweller, some of the forces come from below the earth. And certainly the people who are there, the beings who are there, the hierarchy who are there, those beings I've described, are there to help you ascend. They're not going to be your wings, but they will absolutely show you what you need to do to get your wings. So I was so thrilled when I was asked recently to give a talk on initiation, And of course, that then brought to light the fact that I had yet to do one of our little summaries, Neo-Anthroposophy, which is nothing more than taking Rudolf Steiner's words and giving them to you plain and simple without all the nonsense. So I'll give you my opinion. I'll tell you it's my opinion. I'll give you the opinion of everybody else. And then I will give you Rudolf Steiner's words. And I will leave you with Rudolf Steiner's words, because there are no more profound descriptions of the dweller of the threshold. And in many, many places, Steiner describes this. Now, I will tell you one more thing, and this is the secret that no one wants to hear. So if you waited all this time, here's the big secret. Thinking, feeling, and willing aberrations are given to you by the three elemental worlds. The element, the first, second, and third elemental world, Rudolf Steiner describes, and so few understand. He calls those worlds the worlds of the mothers. They are the world of Saturn, Sun, and Moon. They are what give us the space for beings to interpenetrate us and live literally simultaneous experiences in this realm through us. So the mothers are the three aspects of the dweller, and they are there to help you. They are not there to harm you. So the more you resist, the worse it may look in terms of appearance or your feelings or what you experience in your environment. But the more you accept, just like with the Tibetan Bardo, the more you accept the mothers, the more you accept your own potential supersensible organs. And this is very little known. And it's often denied because of so much in darkening, I call it, of the principle of the feminine in all aspects of theology. So what we're saying here is, no matter whether you think the doppelganger and the your three doubles are there to out to get you, they may know you very well because they hold your unresolved karma. And that's the reason they scare you so bad, because they know all your secrets that you don't even remember. But those are held by the mothers. Now, Rudolf Steiner says, if you wish to approach the mothers, even the first stage is enough to terrify you to death. Seldom does anyone get to the second stage, and almost never does anyone consciously experience the third stage of the elemental realm of ancient Saturn. They would have to understand elemental warmth. They'd have to understand the etheric formative forces. They'd have to understand all the aspects of cosmology instantaneously in their head at once. This would, as a human, annihilate you. So it is not by accident that we are protected from knowing our karmic sins, as it were, or karmic indiscretions, by the mothers on this side, in the very world that that karma is imprinted in, the three elemental worlds, through the Akashic ether, in what Rudolf Steiner calls the Akashic record or the Akashic chronicle, but basically you could call it the memory body of the mothers with the elemental kingdoms. And so we have to thank the mothers, which we call the mother. We have to thank that being who midwife, the Nathan soul, who is also there on the other side of the threshold that appears as Michael on this side, who is Sophia. We have to thank Sophia. And we also have to thank the being that Rudolf Steiner called Anthroposophia, because every time we approach the threshold, we're approaching spiritual development, which is aided and helped by the Holy Spirit, but also by, well, the Holy Spirit helps in redeeming Lucifer, but the being of Sophia, Anthroposophia, Rudolf Steiner has many names for her, Philosophia, over time, Isosophia, but the being of Anthroposophia is in there at the moment of each spiritual development step you take. She is there midwifing that. So if you look closely, you will find three aspects of the feminine divine that are directly connected to the dweller of the threshold in terms of the spiritual development that is the intent of becoming conscious of your own doppelganger, your own three doubles, and in America, a fourth double, by the way, which Rudolf Steiner speaks of, an electronic double created by the North-South mountains, predominantly in America. And so there's even a fourth double in America. But the point is, we created all of those things. And now it's our time to accept the responsibility for them with the help of the mothers, of our guardian angel, Michael, Sophia, Nathan, and the etheric Christ.